Hello, I'm Barry Conway, and this is the Upyango Line, a podcast dedicated to the unique heritage and local culture of the Upper Madawaska and Upyango River Valleys. Today we have a very special show, a memoir of Morning Glory Farm, as told by one of its founders, Robbie Hannah Anderman. He turned 75 this year, and though a long-standing member of our local community, Robbie didn't start out life in the Ottawa Valley. Rather, he arrived here late in the 1960s, along with other American youths seeking out a place to live in what many were to call an alternative lifestyle. Others just saw them as a throwback to the 19th century homesteaders. Some called them hippies, some even draft dodgers. But as many of us who got to know them over the past 50 years, we just call them interesting friends, never at a loss for words, nor innovative ideas, nor different ways of looking at the world around us. A while ago, Martina Koulis, the host of Back in the Day, dropped by Morning Glory Farm to visit Robbie. In fact, her neighbor, who lives just down the road from her own home near Wilno. But before we get to that conversation, one little bit of curious history that many may not know. Late in the 1960s, Robbie and his partner set up Morning Glory Farm on the old Beanish farm that had been laying fallow for nearly 7 years. But when Robbie bought it, little did he know that the ancestors of that Beanish clan, who had emigrated from Poland around 1870, well, the place where they came from in Poland was barely 50 miles from where the ancestors of Robbie's own family had once come from. So in a way, the land upon which Morning Glory was built and Robbie Anderman himself were destined to be reunited, and so he was never really foreign to these parts. He was just coming home to his Beanish neighbor's new place in Canada. Here then is Martina Koulis in conversation with Robbie Anderman, recorded at Morning Glory Farm, back of the beyond between the Wilno Hills.
Robbie Hannah Anderman. I was born in the Sanitarium Hospital in Middletown, New York, 1948, July 8th. And my very close family friends, who used to go camping with our family and play folk music together, I remember visiting them in a house they lived in, and they lived right next to where that hospital was, except the hospital had been torn down, and I was born on the second floor, so I kept looking at this parking lot, and I was born up there.
That's pretty funny to think of when you're a child. Somehow that doesn't look quite right.
As compared to all the 10 Beanish kids who were born here, let alone the Prince kids.
Yes.
That were born here before them.
Yes. They can actually see physically kind of where it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess somehow you ended up throughout your life to land here. So I guess we can kind of start with how did you end up coming to Killaloe?
Well, as if one ended up. But
exactly. You make a good point.
High school, 2 years of Quaker College, so it was very much peace-oriented during the beginnings of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And left there after 2 years and came up to Toronto to do summer school in Russian. Decided I didn't want to do Russian, and the school asked me to leave, and I chose to leave and just was going to drop out in Yorkville. My parents said, but you ever hear of the U.S. draft and the Vietnam War?
Yep.
And if you don't get into school. And I turned around and said, there's a school opening. It really sounds interesting. It's an alternative school, college, called Rochdale.
Okay.
And the idea was that you put a note up on the bulletin board. This is what I want to learn. Who else does? Let's meet at this time and place and discuss how we can pursue our learning together.
Very interesting.
And there are lots of University of Toronto and other people in the city who were willing to be contacted to help if you wanted in their field of interest.
Okay, very interesting.
It was a very brilliant idea.
Yes, yes. That does sound interesting.
And while I was there doing a wood carving class, the guy teaching says, what are you doing in the city? And I went, I'd never thought of it that way. I'd never been in such a big city before. Oh, come on up to Killaloe and take a look around. So a friend of his drives me up to Doyle Mountain Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I look and it's like thigh-deep snow.
Sounds like the area,
winter,
yep.
Yeah. I look at the stars and I've never seen so many stars in my life. And I hear this voice behind me. Well, land's inexpensive about now. And I hear another voice over the other shoulder. Let's buy land together. And I went and told my parents, who fronted me the money to get a van, and we started looking around the hills, based on Mario Langua, who was living at Doyle Mountain.
Okay. So they kind of helped you in your search, I guess.
Very much, because he had what I was saying. He had the topographical map of the whole area on one wall in a side room. But there it was, and we sort of, he was marking places that he heard were for sale.
Oh, wow.
So we went to some many different places.
Were they mostly in this area or all around?
Well, we did make it down to Quadville.
Oh, wow.
But the farmer's wife, okay, the woman farmer, when she looked in who it was there, she slammed the door in our face. Oh, so we went, okay, this isn't the right place.
Yeah, and apparently continued not. On.
And there's one on near Rochefort that we were very interested in. But the farmer's son had just lost it in a card game at the Balmoral, no, at the Beresford.
Oh no! So that
so
didn't
he couldn't
fall.
Sell it to us.
Yeah, apparently not. It wasn't his to sell anymore.
No, those were the two that really. Oh yeah, we also. Yeah, well, we looked at several others. We looked at one that was really sweet because I was more into camping. Mm-hmm. But my partner Mike Nickerson, his mother said only on condition. Well, I front money if you, if it has a house.
Oh, so you have to find property with a house then.
Yeah, land with a house.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, yeah.
See the difference?
Yes, yeah, that's actually interesting that you say that because you don't really realize kind of how you word things and what it means sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
That sweater's your property.
Is
you
it?
You can take it with you.
Yes, but land you can't.
No.
Yeah. Would you say, I guess that's kind of like...
I mean, why wouldn't you call that your property? Did you borrow it from your mother?
I actually did.
There you go. See
so that? It's not mine. So I guess kind of the philosophy that you have, I don't know if that's what you would term it.
Well, one of the courses I was actually helping lead was one on Zen. I don't know if you know Zen Buddhism at all.
I'm not super familiar.
I'm much more interested in the Zen than the Buddhism.
Oh, okay. So that's...
It's basically the idea of here and now.
Okay.
Without all the religious or spiritual context, because it all is.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, without having to define it, or as that saying goes, a God defined is a God confined.
Okay. That's something I can agree with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something worth pondering, anyhow.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is I was taking that... And sharing that, and our textbook was called Zen Flesh, Zen Bones by Paul Reps. And it was just full of little stories that went, oh, look at that as a way to...
A lot of aha moments,
yes.
Almost.
Yeah, just continuing one after another.
Yeah, sounds like a good book.
And then we got here, and Mike and I just picked up some soil, and we went, we can't own all that life.
Yeah.
All those living beings.
Yeah.
We can relate with them. We can do our best to caretake that as little harm as possible can come to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that's very true. So I guess we'll just go back a little bit. So in your search of finding where to move.
Mario brought us here. And the interesting part you might relate well with is between Stony Acres Farm? No, it's not Stony Acres. Okay. If you follow O'Grady Settlement Road around till it meets Doyle Mountain Road, and you go to the first farm on the left,
yes,
that was the end of the road, pretty much. Haggerty Township, just there was nobody beyond there. Why go further? Sherwood, no, it was Radcliffe, was coming up the other way, and they quit at another spot. So we had to come around, and we came around by Brudenell originally. To come all the way to Doyle Mountain Farm. Went back out to the Opiongo, went down here on Wilnow South Road, came in on what's now called Mountain View Road, and came to here. So I was completely turned around. Came in, and it was snow was thigh deep. We had no snowshoes. We just worked our way up to the house, looked at the house, looked at the barns, went up on top of the hill, and in those days you could see Lake Golden Lake, clear, very clear.
Yeah.
And, which you can't now.
No, everything grows. I know even from the hill behind our house, you can't quite see as far as you used to.
Yeah. So, but that vision gave me, like, this is the place. And so then we went and, we hadn't contacted the Beanishes saying we're coming. But, you know, we did after that. We contacted them saying we're coming to talk to you about buying the land. And we set up an appointment with them. And Mike and I arrived, and it was either early March or late February. And we talked to Paul, and he was willing to sell us the land for $2,800.
Wow.
And now, this is $1969 dollars.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, there's no hydro. There's no telephone. There's no running water. Okay, so, you know, but there is a stream going through, and most of the roofs could use repair.
So a little more details, and then you understand why, maybe.
Exactly, yes. So then Agatha came home, and she's a Wisniewski, sort of like Janice.
Oh, okay.
A Wisniewski. And she talked to us, she says, oh, well, there's firewood in the bush. There's these implements, farm implements here. There's da-da-da. And next thing you know, she got us up another $1,500. But still, you know, not very much, but still.
Yeah.
And I felt, you know, looking back, I feel better that she did.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And then, so you used all of that when you moved here, I'm assuming.
All the what?
All, like, the farming.
Yeah, everything that was on the farm stayed with the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we basically made a deal to meet them on March 31st at Judge Harrington's office, or Justice of the Peace, I forget which, probably JP, in Killaloe, and sign the papers. But they let us move up a few days earlier so that we could be settled in, and why not?
Yeah.
And be ready to go in and pay them cash for doing so.
So in Killaloe for the signing, where was that? Was that at someone's house or?
Yes, it was. I think behind Grandma's pantry in that house there.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
could be wrong.
And then, so I guess another question I have is, you mentioned what did you say? The lady farmer. She slammed the door in your face. Did you experience a lot of that when you were looking for places? A lot of
No, we really didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just who we ran into. I mean, Mario said, or Erica said that they had the experience, I think the first winter, or maybe the first, I don't know, the first summer, because they'd been here one summer longer than us.
Yes.
They'd bought it the summer before in 67 and moved up in the spring of 68.
Oh, okay.
They'd bought it right after Expo 67.
Oh, wow. So they kind of, I guess, almost smoothed the path, maybe.
In a way, yeah. Partly he was French-Canadian, which may not have helped much in this area.
Yeah.
But also, and Erica being German, but they were on a farm that had been in, Erica's first partner was Dalton McCarthy. Okay. So he was from Arnprior, but he had all the McCarthy connection here, and that's how he heard the farm was for sale.
Oh. Okay.
And they'd been working together at Expo, and they came up here, and then that's when they found that was for sale, and they liked it. And so, and at some point, somewhere in there, some local guys showed up with guns in the front yard, and Mario and I don't know who else just walked out calmly with a gun as well. Yes, did you want to see me? No, it's okay.
Wow.
And they left. And so that's the only time I've ever heard of that kind of incident.
I can't, like, to me it seems shocking, and maybe because I'm younger, but I still, like, I guess to me it's something that shouldn't happen. I don't know. Wow. It's, you hate to hear that people experience that just moving somewhere else or.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at, what I keep referring to is, in college I took a course in Russian intelligentsia. Which were leading to eventually to the revolutions. Some really great writing went on
Yeah.
Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, and Pushkin. And at a certain point, a lot of these young university nobility or aristocracy or even merchant class started feeling, we've got to help the peasants. They're slaves. And they literally were. They couldn't leave the land without permission. And they had to work for whoever owned the land. I don't know. Did you see that movie on, I forget the name, but it was in Barry's Bay at the arena, and it was about something like 50 or maybe even 100 years of Kajubia.
I might have seen it.
And it was like, and it was like at a certain point the Prussians came in, and this land that had been in this family suddenly was no longer in the family, and all the harvest and everything went to the German aristocrat.
Yes.
So that's what it was like in Russia up until 1917, and then things changed. I won't describe that one. But around 1905 or before that, a lot of them thought, we've got to do something. So they went and moved to the countryside and started to relate to the this. So it wasn't serf they were called. What did they call them? Well, essentially that's their situation. And the people turned on them and told the church, at least, if not the secret police, that these guys are trying to, you know, foment revolution and make us, you know, be upset about our condition.
Wow.
And turn them in. Which, you know, was not a... Well, that's what they did. That's the way the country was run at the time. So, it was, you know, I felt like, hey, this is really nice. Because I found people very welcoming and helpful. It's like the Ostrowskis down the road. Leo was the blacksmith father. He and his wife gave us chickens to put in our chicken house.
And they did they live down the road as well?
They lived, you know, Ostrowski.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know them. Yeah.
So they're just east down the road, 2 miles.
Okay, yeah.
And have the farm there.
Yes, very nice farm
there. Ambrose just died, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And I think another family just bought the farm there.
That could be. I haven't
I think it's a young family, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to meet them.
Yeah, it would be nice. I think they have a couple of young kids, so.
And then if you cross Mountain View onto Lenny Road, and you go to the end where Serpa lives... You then, that's where Eddie Prince lived. And he came and brought us plum trees. And to the due north, that was Johnny Cebulski. And he brought us asparagus plants that are still up in the garden over there 51 years later. And they, and Johnny also brought us one big cook stove, a big Boulanger pink President cook stove over the hill with his horses.
Oh, that must have been quite the sight.
It was beautiful. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I don't think many people can say that they have.
Because this area is pretty empty at the time.
Yeah.
Like, there was no one on your road. There was a Dombrowski here. On another day, I might remember his name. And there was a Dombrowski up the hill there. There was Frankie O'Connor there. No, it was Tommy O'Connor there. And that was a Stanley, not Stanley, Lubetsky. Okay, I'm going to have to let it go. And Stephen Lubetsky up that way.
Okay.
That's and where Danny...
How did you come to get to know people in the area?
Well, we met this Stephen Lubetsky's. Yeah, it was Stephen Lubetsky there, and now it's Stanley Lubetsky here. We needed manure, and he had a barn to shovel out. So we went there and got manure. And people came and found us, or heard about us, or something.
So when you moved in...
We met them, and we went down to Getz's store in Old Killaloo. And, you know, to the stores in Killaloo.
Getz's had a store. Where was the store?
Old Killaloo, across from the mill. Right now there's an antique shop.
Yes, that used to be a store.
And he used to have his house attached to it on the side, toward the stream.
That old mill, I always love looking at that old mill. Was it? It wasn't running then, was it?
No.
Hasn't been running for years.
No. Well, now it's running.
Oh, is it?
It's producing electricity.
Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't been there in a while.
Do you know Bonshire Valley Windows?
Yes.
Okay, so that's Andreas and Petra.
Mm-hmm.
They bought the mill with the intention. Like they went from Germany. They had the idea to, you know, and they searched until they could find a mill that was for sale,
mm-hmm.
that was on water, that could produce electricity, got a mortgage based on the fact that they could produce electricity and sell it to the government. And then did so. And I helped Andreas dig out all the mess that was in the race so you could take the old turbines out that would turn the planing mill and grist mill.
Mm-hmm.
With all the wooden equipment upstairs. Very amazing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see all of that, I'm sure.
And then, so we could put an electric turbine in there and control the water.
I did not
do that. And they paid off their mortgage that way. And then he was doing carpentry and installing eco-friendly carpentry. You know, so you weren't getting the vapors and you weren't doing, okay. you know, damaging...
It wasn't like treated wood or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. And he got into these, he knew these windows that were being made over in Augsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and because the guy was German who was running, and he was German, they got talking, and the next thing the guy said, look, real cheap, you take over the business. And you buy it from me with the profits you make.
Yeah.
And they went for it. And so they lived there and did that for a while until they... We were able to buy another home a bit closer to Eganville, and they moved the whole operation.
Oh, I didn't know that, all that history.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the hills were alive.
So you went a lot to Killaloe or more to Wilna or both?
It's interesting how that worked. I mean, there wasn't much to do in Wilna. Though Eddie Dorjak, I think his name was, who had the garage on the other side of the tracks.
Oh, below.
No, that's Herman Passway with the mill. Okay. Became good friends with him and Gladys. But okay. No, if you went, okay, cross the other side of the highway, mm-hmm. and then you're going across the railroad tracks, and you come to a T.
Yes.
And you take a right, mm-hmm. and on your right is the museum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the left is a house.
Mm-hmm.
Next to that house... the house was even there then, was a wood garage and a wood, I thought it was a wood house and store.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he was basic, very good mechanic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
His place did burn down in 71, I think it was, but I remember taking, you know, my van there to get repaired. Yeah, we'd go to the old general store where the craft gallery is and buy the those maples, those cookies that looked like maple leaves with the yellow filling.
Oh, I know which ones you mean. They're really, really sweet. Yeah.
And they're really good. Yeah.
They are.
And Silverwood's ice cream. That was the best.
Oh, okay.
It was new to me. You know, I was new in Canada. I hadn't been in Canada for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly here I'm. I didn't know what I was settling into. So oddly, okay, talk about getting here. I went to college in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with us taking up space and time?
Yeah, that's fine, thanks.
Oh, good, thank you. So I was in Toronto at Yorkville and then Rochdale. And while I was in Yorkville, my friend from college who graduated the year I left,
mm-hmm.
and was going to York as a graduate student. He says, oh, let's go for a drive, get you out, and we'll go to Algonquin Park. And so we come up, and we get to Maynooth, and he misses the turn. Next thing we're doing, we're coming through Cumbermere, and then you take the turn, and there's this wall on, is it Drevniaks, who put up this basically wall of red pines. And I looked at them, and I went, if I ever settle someplace, this would be the area.
Yeah.
And it was years later that I remember that when I looked at those pines again. It was quite amazing to realize that, you know, I'd sort of set myself... And then we went to Algonquin Park and swimming
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
drove through.
It's funny how you said that and then ended up actually following through, I guess, and
oh, yeah.
doing that. Exactly.
Just to, you know, add another 2 hours onto the trip. Basically.
A nice drive. Nice lookout in Cumbermere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very true. Purdy, more like.
Yes. That's right.
Sure is Purdy.
It's a suiting name for that area.
It is.
So, okay. I guess...
So we got here, and we'd go between... I don't know why. I remember going to Murray's General Store, when it was where the association is now for community living. Mm-hmm. That was really amazing, because he had herbs for sale, and herbal concoctions for sale. And I really looked at him. I didn't get tempted, but I was... Mm-hmm. I just was amazed that they were there.
Yeah.
And then we'd go to Killaloo for, I know we went to the hardware store there, Felliver's.
Where was that?
It was across the street from Keech's, or some call it Keechless, because there's no Keech's involved anymore.
No, there isn't. Oh, okay. So yeah. Killaloo and Wilno looked quite different then.
Oh, for sure, yes. I have this wonderful disc of someone who did interviews sometime around then, or even before then and after then. Oh. Many years later, talking to the same people. And
oh, that would be interesting to see how over time... Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting, yeah, actually, if it, you know, could get permission to put that into your piece, because, I mean, for them to use, for the library to have an archive, because they do have an archive.
Yes, yes.
They do have it uphill, so that's possible.
Yeah, because I know before they did audio recordings, and then they transcribed a book, but they didn't include the questions that they asked. So it's kind of, it jumps a lot, and you're kind of like, how did they end up here? So
I did a bit of reading
with that, and I said, I don't know. So I think this might be a little bit better. But yeah, that would be interesting even just to hear.
Oh, yeah. So the other part of that, and I think it is a video even, is that we had friends who lived in the brick house in Killaloo. I think it was the brick, or else the one next to it. But at any rate, they, one was from BC, and I'm not sure where the other was from. One was named Jackson and Chaz, who ended up moving to Doyle Mountain Farm. And they would go to Madonna House, and Madonna House has Seconds of a Sun. The other thing, they had a whole slew of choir robes. So the story, the imagery, if you can imagine the imagery. Here's, you know, people driving by and looking. Here are these people, or even if they're walking around, long hair and beards and choir robes. And they go, I've seen that in the Bible. What's going on here?
Where am I? Oh, that would be quite the sight. I think I might break a little bit if I saw that driving. Oh my gosh.
I mean, it was, you know, if you can imagine, you know, what it was like for people. Did you ever see There's Hippies Up the Line by the Stone Fence Theater?
No, I haven't, no.
I'm not sure if we have it on DVD or if there is one. But I hope so. And it's, we have the music for it.
Oh, okay.
Stone Fence Theater. And it was basically a story about Ish, who's the main playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And his story of moving to the area.
Okay. Yeah, I think... Must be kind of strange sometimes moving here from outside. You kind of different perspective.
Shirley
for sure.
Had a beautiful description.
Yeah.
Do you know Shirley Mass Connolly?
Maybe to see her, but I don't know the name.
Well, she grew up on Mask Road.
Oh, okay.
So she's a Mask. She married Tom Connolly, mm-hmm. whose ancestor directly was O'Grady.
Oh, okay.
And they own the old Grady settlement.
In the back there?
Yeah, go up to the corner on High Country, mm-hmm. take a left, first left.
Oh, okay.
It's a windy driveway, but it's a nice house, and they fixed it up. And they, as part of one of the Wilno days, they opened it up for open house. But she does the research for the museum.
Oh, okay. So she would know a lot then.
Yeah, she know your whole family history, yeah.
Yeah, might have to talk to her.
Except the German part.
Yes, that one's a little trickier to follow, I'm sure.
Yeah, for her. But she hasn't done it yet. Mm-hmm. But she's done most of the others, including a lot on the Beanishes.
Oh, okay.
Where the Beanishes come from, another connection is about 50 miles west of where my father's parents came from.
Wow, that's where they're from. Mm-hmm. That's ironic.
I don't know if it's ironic, but it's you know, it borders on the land of wonder.
Mm-hmm. So, do you know about the Beanishes? I guess you said that they had 10 children when they lived here.
Yes.
Do you know anything else about the family?
In the sense that we have met most all of them. There's only one of those children still alive.
Oh my gosh.
The one who married the last daughter to get married is still alive, and they lived upstairs in this room.
Oh, really?
For at least a year or two helping farm before the Beanishes moved to town. And we bought the farm after they'd been gone for 7 years.
Oh, okay, so it was empty for 7 years then.
Yeah. Which, for organic standards, really helps be a organic farm.
Why is that?
Well, certification, you have to transition between non-organic to organic.
Okay.
To make sure there has been no chemicals applied.
Oh, okay.
I've never asked if they did, but I don't want to put aspersions on anyone from me. Hard enough to grow food here.
Yeah, yeah. Is there like a certain time period that you need to do it for? Or?
I think it's 3 years.
Oh, okay. So then even if they did,
yeah,
you had more than double that time.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, okay. I never even realized that there, I guess there's a lot of things for organic farming. A lot.
Yes, and that's the reason of certification is, I mean, there's a group called the United Farm Workers in California,
mm-hmm.
and they were helping the farm workers get paid a living set wage,
mm-hmm.
and but they were out there doing the work, and at one point one of them took a picture. They'd just been finished harvesting a field, and they were putting the grapes into boxes, and this one said, "So-and-so Brothers Grape Company," so-called, and this one says, "So-and-so Grape Company Organic."
Mm-hmm.
Exact same grapes.
Mm.
Through the whistle.
Yeah, because you
and
have...
And that, you know, help people understand there's a difference, and it can be seen and quantified. So it's paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's growing and processing hemp in Peterborough area, and she does the only... You know, hemp seed is round, relatively. And that's really crusty.
Okay.
It's a really good, if you eat the seed whole, it's a really good laxative. But
mm-hmm.
if you take off the fiber, the outer fiber, then you're exposing the proteins, which has most all the proteins you need to survive. Mm-hmm. Plus, in fact, you can grow more protein in an acre of ground than you can for any other food.
I don't know. Wow.
And the only thing close is like soy, but, and you can eat the hemp raw and get the protein, or cook it mildly. But the soy has a digestion inhibitor in it, so you have to process. You have to actually ferment it. You can't just cook it. So the odd thing is that soy was pushed during World War II. It caught on. It's been used for cows, which never ate it before. They were eating peas, but the Chinese would ferment it to either miso,
mm-hmm.
or the Indonesians, which was used, you know, maybe a tablespoon in a meal to complement the bean side of protein. And it was fermented, so it added like sauerkraut. So it helped you digest your food and your meal.
Yeah.
Or the Indonesians would ferment it and grow it, a bacteria, I think, on it, and it would get fuzzy. They'd cook it, and then they'd grow the bacteria and get fuzzy, and then cook it, and then eat it, and could kill the fuzz mold. It's mold, yeah. And then you could digest it,
mm-hmm.
because it had been pre-digested.
Oh my gosh.
But all this tofu and all this soy milk,
mm-hmm.
people are taking it in. They're getting all the estrogens, which can contribute to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really digesting it.
That you need to
And they're saying a vegan diet is good with that. It's not. Nor a vegetarian diet. It's not really supplying you your protein.
Yeah.
On paper it does, but not in the body. I'm into food, yes.
Yeah, I took a nutrition class last year, and that's why I'm like, oh, yeah, we talked about the soy thing and how it's not as great as it seems, for sure. We talked about that in class.
But they didn't teach you about hemp.
No, they didn't really touch on hemp, no.
I have a book from the University of Guelph that they gave us when we were doing some testing there. Okay. And on making our hemp ice cream, non-dairy frozen dessert. And it's a book called Vegetable Proteins. Mm-hmm. And it takes apart hemp, amongst all the others.
Yeah.
And says how much is in there. And it has globulin and albumin.
Oh, okay.
You know those?
Yes, I've heard of those.
Where else do you find those?
Oh, you're testing me.
Eggs.
Yes, and eggs are a great source of protein. We did talk about eggs.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So this is a great protein.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, if one was to get on the bandwagon or start educating people on the fact of, look what this COVID has shown us about our supply. Mm-hmm. Plus, we've got all these people who are moving into the area because they want to be in the city. So we've got more people to feed if the supply and the stores can't get their food in. Mm-hmm. What can we grow locally to supply so many people? Hemp.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not hard. There's a guy, Reuben Stone, over in near the Snake River, where it meets the Highway 417, or 17.
Okay.
Reuben Stone, and off Mountain Road, that's it. And he's been contracting farmers to grow for him 1,000 acres of hemp a year.
Mm.
So, and he's figured out a variety that he can then... pay the, you know, the farmers have to pay him for the variety that they're growing. But the beauty of that variety is cannabis is dioecious.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no?
Okay. Not sure what it means, but I'm assuming you'll explain.
And I think, what's another example of that? There are trees that are dioecious, and there's many, well, I have fruit that's dioecious. Dioecious. In that... you have male and female plants.
Oh, okay.
So, in other words, if you're growing for seed, mm-hmm. and you have to put it through a combine, well, the male puts out its pollen,
mm-hmm.
and then the stalk goes, I'm done. Meanwhile, the pollinated females
mm-hmm.
will continue growing and go through the whole process of making seeds.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now you have to about, oh, let's say about this height, mm-hmm. you have dead stalks of the toughest fiber, natural fiber grown on earth.
Is hemp?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And at this height, it's dead rather than flexible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you go through there in a combine, you got to go slow, and you've got to guard anything that goes around because it will wrap. And the first year of growing in Canada, combines were burned because it got so hot from burning that, from that. So what Reuben found... from someone I said, talk to this guy, he found out that there is a variety that had been developed that's monoecious.
Okay, meaning that there's no, like, male-female, or...?
Male and female on the same plant.
Oh, okay.
Which are mostly your plants, right?
Oh, so then it would keep growing?
Well,
or...
you don't have the dead stock.
Oh.
You can go through there on a combine... just, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Speedy Gonzales, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that would make a difference.
It makes a big difference. Because harvest is so much of it. It meant he has to maintain the seed, which means that it's... he hires high school students to go through what the term is called rogue.
Mm-hmm.
When they start looking like they're going to be males, pull them and lay them on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they'd go for days, you know, at a certain period, and then go through again to make sure no new ones had come, so that the seed that's produced is only from the monoecious plants. So that growing trait is in mm-hmm. the seed.
Oh my gosh.
Because otherwise it will revert back to being dioecious.
Yeah.
You ever hear of Paul Anka, the singer? Canadian singer?
Yes.
Okay, so the seed is named Anka after him.
Well, that's odd.
Yeah, I guess the guy, the seed breeder, David, I think was his name. I'm not sure. Oh, well, it's been a while since I've done that, but I'd love to get back in there. Because it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That's why we got into hemp, was to educate people, saying, hemp makes sense.
Well, from what you said, it really does.
And the fact that you know, the fiber then can be turned into paper instead of logging all these trees, and like you can grow more fiber per acre over a 20-year period with hemp than you can with trees.
It makes sense to grow hemp.
Yeah, there's so much that can be made with hemp.
So I guess kind of the farming techniques when you first came here, did you pick up a lot of them from the locals, or was it kind of, you probably learned from each other?
And from each other, and from books.
Okay.
We used to have, somewhere on the farm now was an organic, with the other one, you know, of interest, and I can talk for hours, so keep, you know, turn me in the direction you want.
Okay, I'm interested, that's a problem, so I get distracted too.
The first, I'm trying to think of the time, exact time period, but somewhere in that spring, or maybe it was in the fall.
That history really needs to be done. The history of the flower children, the history of the people who went, no, that war machine does not make sense, and I don't want to feed it. And that's part of my thing. I didn't want to be in a university or college that was feeding the war machine and creating misery. That's from going to a Quaker college. I mean, in high school, it was like, I didn't like the Vietnam, I didn't like the civil rights issues in the States or the Native issues, but I didn't, I hadn't tuned into what was going on. I thought communism, because that's, you know, that's the religion of the United States at the time. Mm-hmm. That was taught in the schools. But I go to this Quaker college and they start showing me what's really going on and all the lies that were being told. And I realized, you know, the war machine. And that's, you know, so when I landed here, it was like, my parents, while I was in Rochdale, my parents went, you know, that's an experimental school and we've just received your draft notice. You're reclassified 1A, prime candidate, instead of 2S, which is student. And so they didn't want me to get drafted because they knew if I got drafted, I'd stay in Canada. And they wanted me to come visit.
Fair enough.
On a simple term, I'm sure there's more.
Yeah.
I mean, my father's father was a draft objector, so he never went into World War I.
Yes, I had read that, yeah.
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 So, you know, it's part of my family. And so they paid me to fly down to New York and see a shrink that they knew. And I did that at least twice. He, you know, gave me some tests, and he wrote a paper to the draft board saying that I was schizophrenic, caused by mescaline and hashish, and that it wouldn't be good for me or the Army if I went in the Army. And I get a, wasn't a 4F, but it was 1O or something, not O, and that's objector. I forget the number. But anyway, it was basically psychological deferment.
Oh, okay.
So they were on my side in that way, and that let me go back and forth all these years.
Oh.
And eventually a dual citizenship.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I was reading it, and I was going to ask you kind of about how that worked out. Because I was thinking once you were in school that you couldn't get drafted, but like you were saying, because it was a Quaker school.
Well, the Quaker school was fine.
Oh, okay.
Rochdale in Toronto was experimental, and we had no accreditation.
Okay.
And the Quaker school was from 1838. No, they were very high credentials.
Okay, so then when you...
For liberal arts.
So when you... Because you did... You were at the Quaker school, and then you did summer school at Harvard and U of T classes, right?
Yeah.
So then those all kind of exempted you from being drafted, and then that's when you ran into the problem. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I understand now. So that's quite a process to kind of...
But, you know, it was a very idealistic time. You know, one, at Rochdale we felt, you know, there's a new way you can do education, which is what we ended up relating with our children, in the sense of, well, we set up an alternative school. Actually, there were three operating in the area at one point. And Keith was the principal, and then it was, and Sunrose was the vice principal and main teacher. And she did a whole school here as well for preschool and such, because she learned that in college and had done that in Mississippi during the civil rights struggles.
Okay.
That kind of education, you know, process. So she was into that, and then we set up the Kilu Alternative School, essentially in the farm in the schoolhouse at the end of the road here,
mm-hmm.
Mountain View.
Yeah.
It was originally started in Cormac, but then moved over here after 1 or 2 years.
Oh. Okay.
And then he moved here for the last year. It was a 13-year school.
In this house?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then when it ended, you know, the kids just didn't want to go to school, and we tuned into a magazine and a writer, Learning Without Schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of home learning at home or home learning rather than homeschooling, because okay. Homeschooling is like following a curriculum. And this is what you have to learn, rather than learning at home, which is, you know, have you ever tried to teach a child how to walk? How about talking? But when they want to and when they're ready,
they do.
Try to stop them.
Yeah.
So when a child wants to learn anything, help them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's where the time, but the excitement comes from. Because suddenly they're seeing the world through new eyes that I haven't seen it through before.
Yeah. So I guess... Now, do you still do, I guess it's not homeschooling, it's like you said, learning from home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still what the community does? Or
there's a teen who's doing that. Rivley has gone to public school, though it'd really be nice if she didn't have to now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now they got all that Wi-Fi in there and how yeah. negative that is for health.
Yeah.
And wearing masks all day.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how it happens in the fall, I guess. That's mm-hmm. for sure. So there was three. So there was the one in Killaloe in the farmhouse, and then it moved here? Or were
yes,
those two
yes.
different ones?
It was in Cormac, then it was in Old Killaloe.
Okay.
In the single one-room schoolhouse there that mm-hmm. Andy Mask is fixing up.
Yes, yeah, that's a nice spot there.
Yeah, very nice spot.
And then would they walk from here there, or how?
We generally drove them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Get up in the morning and go. Yeah. That was new. But when it stopped, and it was here, then that's when they wanted to learn at home.
Mm-hmm.
And they did so, and we helped with that. And then when my uncle heard about that they're learning at home, he said, "They need a computer." And I said, "Okay." And Daryl went, "Only if it's in color." Which, you know, at that time actually was something.
Yeah. So Daryl's one of
oldest,
your sons,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny request.
Mm-hmm.
So then did you have one person teaching, or?
It would, you know, generally it would, you mean like his home learning or in the school?
Either one. Or...
Okay, in the school we hired Kathy Eisner.
Okay.
To be the teacher for, I'd say, at least 10, if not 11 of the 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she, and then the parents would come in and help every day as well. And the parents paid her and paid rent on the school building.
Oh, okay.
And that's how that worked. It was, you know, totally parent funded. We looked at getting alternative school status with the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on that. And when they were coming to inspect the building, that's when I got this phone call saying, "Can you get this trampoline out of here? It wouldn't look good for our insurance if there's a trampoline," and which someone had brought from Toronto because they were lowering the ceiling in a gym, and the school went, "We don't know what to do with it. It's too low to use the trampoline now."
Yeah.
And so he says, "Oh, I know these kids who would like it." So they brought it up to the alternative school, and then they wanted to get rid of it, and it's now in our barn. But it had a lot of time out back here.
Yeah.
And Ethan was bouncing up and down. And he opened his eyes and went, "Go away!" And it was a bear. And the bear ran like he'd never seen anything going up and down before. Right?
Why are you moving in this direction? Oh my gosh.
And Barney was taking photos of him on the trampoline. And you know the lotus pose in yoga?
Yes, yeah.
So he had a picture of Daryl, basically, you know, wearing nothing. And bouncing up and down until he got at least this high above the trampoline in a lotus pose. And cut it off at the trampoline. So he's up in the air about that much, looking very serene, right?
Oh my gosh, that would be quite the photo. Who needs Photoshop when you can just take pictures like that?
Yeah, Barney was very creative.
Now, did Barney live here?
Never.
No, okay.
We met Barney in the first spring when we went to Madonna House together.
Okay. You want to tell me a bit about the Madonna House and your connection to it, I guess?
Well, Madonna House, I'm not sure how we got introduced to them, but other than that, they probably knew about the community that was happening closer to them at Doyle Mountain, mm-hmm. where it was many people camping out and then a farmhouse. And people got told, you didn't help get ready for winter. Go. And they ended up moving to Cebulski's farmhouse on the hilltop up here. So we, the first winter, we were going back and forth over snow like that. You stepped off the path. You went down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from there, while walking in at night, that we could see Eddie Prince's house burning. That was quite a sight.
So his house burnt down then?
Yeah. And then he moved into Wilno at Gladys and Herman Pestway.
Okay.
At the, down by the sawmill there at the bottom of the hill.
Okay, yeah.
And so suddenly Father Gene, I forget his last name, Cullahan or something like that, showed up out front here. I hear you're into, you're sharing land together and you're a community and we're a community and how can we help? And so, they made, clothing available incredibly inexpensively. Stack of clothes, 25 cents.
Wow.
You need this and that. They were getting us odds and ends. They also would show up with cheese, waxed over cheese, and it was nothing like I'd ever had before. It was cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
So that cheese was the cheese they made?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know they made cheese. Do they still make cheese?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they've got a running farm. They feed themselves.
They have. I know that they have
quite a bit. They beg, but they also feed themselves.
Yeah. They have quite a bit of land there. I didn't realize. Someone was telling me, but...
Sure, a lot of people donate to the church and donate to them. And
yeah.
And they help people. I mean, Catherine Doherty has... And she was a nurse and a midwife in a place that had none.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not that I'd heard of.
So she was she the founder?
Yeah.
Okay. That's how it all
And she was a baroness from Russia.
Oh, really?
Who, had to leave after the revolution.
Wow. A lot of people...
Her story is worth reading.
Yeah.
Oh, it really is. She's quite an amazing person.
I'm going to have to look if I can find it.
And she was in the nobility, but what her family had her do was learn how to do every skill on the farm, especially in the house, to where she was serving her family meals and helping the cook and the people in the kitchen, so that when she was the governess or the mistress of the house, she knew how to do it because she...
Had done it.
And so that's why they have such a craft base over there, because she'd learned that as well.
Well,
and
yeah.
Promoted that while she was there.
Yeah, I'm sure that would make a difference if you're running a place like that.
That's
for sure.
Very much so.
So you had spent some time there in between, or?
I spent some time there in 71.
Oh, okay.
And some friends had gone there. They wanted to learn farming. And these people offered them the opportunity. So I lived on the farm, and we said psalms when we got up, we said psalms when we went to bed. And I worked in the greenhouse, and I worked, on the farm, and, frost coming in, we got to cover, 1,000 tomatoes and 700 peppers that I'd been tending in the greenhouse, and we just planted them out, oh, there's a frost coming.
Yeah.
And so we got to go cover everything with hay, and did so, and that was a big lesson.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So do you think you probably picked up some of the stuff they did there and brought it here?
Yeah, I plant a lot the way they taught me.
Yeah.
And learned to care for plants and learned they have a Quebec oven similar to that one.
Oh, okay. Did they get theirs after or before?
No. They were, in 1971, they'd had it a long time.
Oh, okay.
And this one's 2012 or 11, one of the two.
Fairly new.
Yeah.
Old style, but fairly new.
Mm-hmm. It works. Michael, your ancestors, it worked.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it was Felix, yes?
Yes, my grandpa was Felix and Susan, yeah.
Yeah, they did quite well.
Yes, they did, yeah.
They had good farmland, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess Yeah, because I find it interesting that you guys are able to farm, I guess, so well, because up at our house we have so many rocks.
Yes.
Did you find a lot of rocks?
Do you read the Eatonville Leader at all?
Once in a while. We don't get it, though. Why?
No, I get it, and I write letters to the editor regularly. But last week on the front page, they had Go Greens gardens.
Okay.
Go Green salads. And Brian is like, his ancestors have always been farmers, but when big farming, get bigger, got out, really was showing its face in Nova Scotia, where he's living, he left. His family stayed, his brothers stayed, but he moved here, moved into, right into the corner of Brudenell. Mm-hmm. You may have seen greenhouses there.
I think so.
That's his operation. And his son Aaron's pretty much been running it for 10 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian also works there. And you know, a couple friends work there, and they supply, they grow, as the article says, there's like an inch of topsoil, and they've built it up now to be supplying like Rideau House and all these restaurants and stores in Ottawa, salad bags, usually like 20 to 30 different leaves and flowers in every bag.
Wow.
Because that's where your nutrition is and having more. And that's where how his compost is made, by having many products. I mean, many leaves to compost.
Mm-hmm.
The more, the better, to make better compost.
Mm-hmm. And so they have a pretty big farm then, there? Or is it
fairly? No, they don't.
It's all still small?
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, that's something that, you know, I almost wrote a letter to the editor talking about that was, you know, these innovative ideas, how to live here, and they're doing it without livestock. Just like the Huron, right, the Wendat's over that way, but south of us was the Haudenosaunee.
Mm-hmm.
And what they had was, I'm writing a paper on the invasion of Haudenosaunee territory coming up from Pennsylvania in 1779 by the Americans. Army of 5,000, and they just swept through there. But they didn't just sweep through. They didn't want to defeat them only. They wanted to destroy their morale. They wanted to destroy them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their ability to feed themselves. They cut down acres, hundreds of acres of corn. One place had 500 acres, one village. They burned like 20 villages. Burned.
Mm-hmm.
And they were cutting, one place had 1,500 peach trees, and they cut them all down. They had corn that was 16 feet tall with 2-foot cobs. 2 foot, that's like there.
Holy crap.
Now these people knew how to farm.
Clearly.
Without livestock.
You don't have any livestock on the farm here?
We have less as of today. A big brown Swiss just headed out the driveway with her calf.
Missed it.
But there's still a Dexter and her calf,
mm-hmm.
and I think 4 goats, 6 chickens.
So not as many then. Did you have more previously, or?
There was a point where Dave Thompson had 2 milking cows for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he was using one of them like an oxen, so he was dragging his firewood out of the woods with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else are you going to do? If you can't afford a horse, you have an oxen.
Yes.
They say a horse, if you have, let's say you have 100 acres.
Mm-hmm.
33 of those acres supported your horses.
That would take up a lot then, yeah.
That's hay and grain.
Yeah. Just one horse.
I'm not sure if it was one or more.
Yeah.
But to run a 100 acre farm, let's say.
Wow.
I don't know the full, but just that number always stuck with me. 1/3 of it had to be for the horses.
Yeah. That is worth remembering, I would say.
Yeah, it's like, you know, oh, we'll get a horse, we'll be fine, yeah. Well, it's like we had 2 cows, and we don't have the pasture to support 2 cows.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah, you gotta, I guess, farming comes with
and
a lot of
planning.
And
we don't have the fish to do like the native people did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there, you know the sucker that comes up in the spring?
Yes.
That's all in the Abenaki language. Or Wabanaki language, they're called a certain name, which means, translates as garden fish. Because you can't, they're so bony, you can't really eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't taste great unless you pickle them. and break down all the bones. Mm-hmm. So what they would do is they'd put that at the bottom of a mound, and they'd plant their corn there.
Okay.
On top of it. And that was their fertilizer. A foot down, so the raccoons didn't just dig it up.
Mm-hmm. That's key. Mm-hmm. So I guess being close, I guess, pretty close to native people around you, did you ever find that you learned things from them as well?
Not much, other than going over one time with the alternative school people and going through the museum. Mm-hmm. That was quite something. And also, and I was saying, don't touch that birch bark canoe, it's very fragile.
Yeah.
I was thinking of them. I wasn't thinking of heavyweight, real birch bark.
Yeah.
And the guy who was there went, oh no, and he gives it a kick.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's strong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're using really good, heavy birch bark.
Yeah, yeah. I would be the same way. I think I'd be pretty careful until you actually feel it.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd probably help build it.
Yeah.
And used it.
I probably knew how to fix it.
Yeah.
If it didn't break.
So Madonna House, you know, was there. And while I was there, I got jaundice or hepatitis.
Yeah.
There's a kind of hepatitis which is also called jaundice.
Okay.
And what I'd gone from is a totally vegan diet to eating animal products at every meal. And if that doesn't challenge your liver, I don't know what will.
Yeah,
At least it challenged mine. So my eyes turned yellow. So they put me in isolation for 3 weeks. Wash your hands on the way in, wash your hands on the way out. Got to read the Bible, I got to do yoga, I got to da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And watched... Out front was their main house orchard. I got to watch the apple. It's come into bloom. Mm-hmm. That's great. And I learned, I was reading Back to Eden, which was an herbal book. Actually, there's a copy here I noticed the other day. But it's like an old-time herbalist. There he is. This isn't the copy original, but... And it's how, so when I got jaundice, I looked in there how to deal with it.
Okay.
And it has all these herbs and that grow in this area and how to use them. And they said, you know, with hepatitis, you cut out all animal products. Mm-hmm. And you eat lots of liver boosting products like dandelion root, dandelion leaf tea, and things like that. And beautiful people, they were digging dandelions for me. So feeding me dandelion and giving me a meal without animal products. So they were leery of it. They finally had a priest come in and give me a talking to. He says, I sit down at a table of 10 people at every meal. And I'm vegetarian. I couldn't tell you what was served to me because it was served with love. And I can tell you what everybody at that person did today. But I couldn't tell you what we ate. And if someone comes to visit me in my cabin, I have cans of fish over the door so I can give them what they need.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that, you know, that showed me the power of, you know, there's more to food than... And so I started eating a little protein after 2 weeks. But after 2 weeks, my blood was better than most people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then after 3 weeks, they said, you're great. And I went back to work on the farm. So I have this connection. And then my parents showed up after 3 months and somehow interested me in going back to my hometown with them, going back to college. So I went back to a summer school at a community college there, and then got into a college in Vermont. And while I was, the summer before, I'd been in Woodstock, New York, working in a macrobiotic restaurant, which also is vegetarian. And so I learned a lot about cooking. Mm-hmm. Enough so that when I went through the line at the cafeteria and I was looking at all the food and suddenly I'm looking at a cash register. Nothing had said eat me. There was nothing on my tray. Mm-hmm. Nothing was tempting at all.
Yeah.
So I went and asked for my money back. And they said, you know, they shuffled me from office to office until finally one guy said, you think you can do better, do you? And I went, yeah. You give me my money back, I'll go to the natural food store in the next town, and I'll prepare my food either, you know, plain, simple, or use a hot plate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You think you can do better? Yeah. Okay, you got a job. Next thing I knew, I was cooking for 20 to 40 kids. 2 meals a day, putting out granola for breakfast.
Yeah.
And did that for autumn until, another long story, but I was already into Back to Eden and then moved back up here. So I went back to college and then ended up moving back here because I found I was a father.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hadn't known that because she told me, I don't know if that's in the book.
I think I had read something about that.
Yeah, she told me that it was okay with her husband and it was okay with that she, don't worry about getting pregnant. I said, I don't want to be a father. She says, I'm already pregnant, don't worry. And what about your husband? It's okay. We've already agreed to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed her. And she was telling the truth as far as she knew. But it wasn't true on either count.
Oh.
Because he was upset.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, ideally, yes, of course.
Yeah.
You know, we know the world is perfect and that's the way we're moving. But it's another thing to see your wife going with someone else and...
Actually doing it, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So that's how you ended up back here then.
Yes. She said, are you Jackson's father? And I went, whether or not I am, to myself, I said, he's now without a father and I'm responsible on a certain level. And I want to be responsible. And it was challenging in the long term because we were together on that, on my side. On her side, it was love.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize until our relationship really fell apart that I really did love her.
Mm-hmm.
And missed her.
Yeah.
So that's part of life.
Yeah.
And life lessons. And that was also the line that crossed my parents out, because here I was doing adultery and there was a son, and I was taking that on and not going back to college. In fact, I left the college I'd gone back to,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
moved in here instead.
Yeah.
And lived in the dome with her and another couple,
mm-hmm,
for a winter, and then realized we couldn't survive here because I had no skills that were sellable.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And we ended up going back to Woodstock, New York, where I worked in a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And worked in the restaurant there for a bit and then got on welfare because on the way south, we visited somebody on Toronto Island and they had a loop in the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was you put your foot in there and you can just hang, you know, upside down, straight down, and let your body and your spine elongate.
Okay.
So, try something. So I try it and then I realize it's time to get up. So I start bending up and they go, would you like help? And I went, no, I'm sure I can do it. And I could. I got up and my hands were right on my ankle and the strap broke. So imagine you're like that. Chunk, straight down.
Yeah.
So injured my back, and that enabled us over in Woodstock to get, you know, a doctor to get us on welfare.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we basically lived. And then at one point we were living in a tent because there, you know, there wasn't enough money other than eating.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And it was a time in Woodstock where lots of people were wanting to move to Woodstock because it was after the Woodstock Festival. And, oh, Woodstock, that's where Bob Dylan lives and the band and da-da-da. So there wasn't much real estate available. And they were leery of long-haired people with kids who just really had no sustenance.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I mean, they set up an organization that's still going called Family. It's like a social services, you know, they help people find places and get food and,
mm-hmm,
and medical care and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the campground we were on, was the Family campground. It was to help people, but it rained all the whole month we were there.
Oh no. Maybe not such a good place to live.
No, and so when we went to town to go shopping and there was a caravan leaving to go to the Rainbow Family Gathering in Colorado, we got on. Because we at the same time, they said, there's a caravan leaving and there's a hurricane coming. I don't know if there really was a hurricane. It was in July. I mean, it was in June. You don't get hurricanes in June. But that's what we heard. We just believed them. Cause
yeah, you we know other proof.
We were reading
proof?
The newspaper. Who could afford a newspaper? You certainly didn't have radio or television or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just learning how to be alive. So we got on and went to Colorado and then came back to Minnesota, where her family was from, and then my goodness, and then ended up, we went back to Vermont, but we were pregnant by that point and then needed a midwife, and we couldn't, or a doctor at least, to come to our home, and we couldn't find one there. Mm-hmm. So we went back to Woodstock where we could find one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we were back in Woodstock, and then went from there to there to there to there to there, to there, and eventually ended up back in the dome.
Oh my gosh. So you really, yeah. You traveled, really traveled a lot.
Yeah.
Saw a lot of the states.
I have a song that starts off, used to travel all over the place. Millions of people have seen my face. Gas tank's empty, the insurance is gone. All I can do now is sing you this song. Still do lots of traveling around these hills now, much as I can on my 2 feet somehow. New way of living, and I'm learning slow. Sure, I'm happy I don't have to go.
I like that. That summarizes it pretty well.
Time now for a short break. We'll be right back with Robbie Anderman as he talks about his life and the history of Morning Glory Farm.